What is up? Welcome to another edition of the NFL Fantasy Football Podcast. It's me, your man, MG Marcus Grant, alongside the Fantasy Viper, Grant Barfield. Michael Fabiano is off today. Hopefully, he'll be back with us on Wednesday, which I guess is a good way to let you know. We are down to two shows a week. We are Monday and Wednesday. You guys don't want to work on Friday. We don't want to work on Friday.
Oh.
So we're going to do Monday and Wednesday.
Who wants to work on Friday?
Right, exactly. So, hey, Graham, welcome back. Happy New Year, man.
Thank you. Same to you, man. And it's good to be back.
Yeah.
Had some travel and some family stuff going on, and it's kind of a hectic holidays.
Right.
But it feels good to be back. Feels good to be back in the swing of things, and happy to be back.
Absolutely. Well, we got plenty to talk about today. I mean, we will go through some of the coaching carousel issues because there has been news on that front this morning. So we'll talk about that. One big question for at least this episode, talking about Tom Brady and what his future is going to be. Also looking at some guys who maybe could bust or at least be disappointing next year. And we'll kind of gauge whether or not that's going to work. We'll do some fun stuff too at the end of the show because it's the off season for us. And now we have time to do fun things. There are no Game of Thrones recaps. Sorry, folks. We haven't found a new show to go and do, but we'll do something fun anyway. But before we do all that, we'll go behind the glass, talk to our faithful producer, Senior Edward L. Murphy, Esquire. Murph, what's up?
Guys, it's a pretty good Monday if you're a Giants fan. Well, I think any football fan's happy that the Pats lost.
Pretty much,
and
yeah.
If you're a Giants fan, you have the Eagles loss. And then I guess I don't think Giants fans as a group wanted Mike McCarthy as head coach. He's a pretty vanilla option. It was if you get him, great. If you don't, it's like, yeah, whatever. So I think today is probably one of the happiest Mondays I've had in quite some time.
All right. Does that erase the sting of potentially losing Chase Young?
I guess. I don't know if I said that on the show, but I after watching that last Eagles-Giants game, the one that the Giants almost won, if it wasn't for a Daniel Jones fumble, which is the point of the story, is like he fumbled. Why? Because he has no protection. And part of me was like, oh, maybe they do need a left tackle instead of Chase Young. So maybe they need to try to get Andrew Thomas from Georgia somehow, or I don't know, spend money on a left
or
move, sold their right tackle and get a new left. Like that to me is like actually option number one.
Or bright idea. Dave Gettleman does something he's never done before.
Trade back.
And he trades back.
Yeah. I don't know about
something
that.
He should actually do and trade back.
Pigs will fly before he...
one thing I do want to do on this show as we get closer, as we get into the meat of draft season, I want to try to get maybe Rhett Lewis. Maybe we can get Bucky Brooks and or Daniel. I know Daniel Jeremiah is a tough ask this time of year because he's crazy busy. But, Rhett Lewis, who's our pal who hosted NFL Fantasy Live this year and is also part of the Path to the Draft show. Hopefully we can get him on and we can talk some of these draft prospects too, because that'd be fun.
We can make that happen.
Absolutely. All right. That's enough chit chat. Let's do some news.
Through the news.
All right, we will start in Dallas. So last night, when I was writing this rundown, the latest news was that the Cowboys finally, after just a labored and tortured week, finally pulled the plug on the Jason Garrett era as the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. So that was last night. This morning, I get here and I sit down here in the podcast studio. And just as I open up Twitter, I see the breaking news that Mike McCarthy has been hired as the new head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. Now, this would be perfect to have Fabs here for, obviously, to get his take. And I'm sure when he comes back on Wednesday, he will have thoughts and we will get those thoughts from him then. But, I mean, in the short term, Graham, with us really kind of just processing this news as it's just happening, I don't know what to think about it. I do know Mike McCarthy said in recent weeks that he's changing his approach. He really wants to dive in and be more analytical with this sort of thing. He understands that he's got to adapt. So I know that's going to make a certain segment of Twitter very, very happy. Does this mean anything big for Dak Prescott, Ezekiel Elliott, Amari Cooper at all, all those guys there?
I think that's the big thing, is like, how much is Mike McCarthy willing to change? Because the last time we saw McCarthy, he was definitely not a forward-thinking coach.
All right.
Apparently, there's a report. He said he's going to hire it. Wherever he goes, this was obviously before the Cowboys news, but before wherever he was going to go, he's going to hire a 12-man team of, kind of analytics experts, guys that are going to help him review film, review data, get really deep into the weeds with PFF data, get deep into the weeds with NGS and GPS tracking data. That's all encouraging, but it's just, it remains to be seen if McCarthy will actually make his words true. Obviously, though, he's got so, I mean, this is the same thing we've been talking about with Dallas, especially on offense for the last couple of years. It's like they have so many weapons and they just continually underachieve. And
right.
At least we've seen Mike McCarthy get fantastic seasons out of his big-time weapons in the past. I mean, Jordy Nelson had just monster fantasy mm-hmm. seasons under McCarthy. Randall Cobb and Jordy Nelson were both top 12 receivers. And I think, if anything, McCarthy will know how to use those two guys. He'll know how to use his two top weapons between Gallup and Cooper. But at the same time, I kind of just feel like this is a bit of a bland hire.
Right?
You know, like McCarthy, I'm intrigued to see if McCarthy has grown and has changed. That would be exciting because, mm-hmm. I mean, literally anything analytically driven would be the opposite of Jason Garrett. So I'm excited for that aspect. It's just, it still feels a bit bland to me.
Is it, and like, I really don't know the answer. Is it bland because we've just seen McCarthy and we sort of know what he is? Or is it bland because... just a few weeks ago, we were talking about Lincoln Riley.
Probably, yeah.
You know, we were talking about Lincoln Riley and him bringing that Oklahoma offense potentially to Dallas and maybe doing what Cliff Kingsbury is trying to do down in Arizona and something like that. And so then to go from there to Mike McCarthy, it does feel sort of like a letdown.
I think that's probably it. I mean, I wanted Lincoln Riley just selfishly to see what he could do with Dak and all those guys. So maybe that is what it is.
Yeah.
I get it, though. Jerry Jones reportedly wanted somebody who has had a bunch of head coaching experience, and Mike McCarthy is pretty easily the best option available if you're going that
route. Well, especially once Ron Rivera was off the market.
Exactly.
You know, I also wonder, we may never know this, I wonder how much Oklahoma getting boat raced by LSU had to do
they were
with
not, Lincoln. They were not even competitive in that game.
Not even a little bit. And I just wonder if Jerry looked at that and said, yeah, maybe not. More coaching news. Kevin Stefanski, who is the offensive coordinator for the Minnesota Vikings, who are surprisingly still playing right now in the NFL playoffs. He is on the block to be interviewed by the Cleveland Browns and the Carolina Panthers, both of whom let their coaches go. At the same time, Josh McDaniels, who has a lot of free time now, he is scheduled to conduct some coaching interviews on January 10th. Now, what, Browns, Panthers are the jobs that are still out there right now. Am I missing anybody? I think that's it, mm-hmm. of the open jobs. Either one of these guys excite you in either one of those jobs there?
I'm excited to see what McDaniels does, because it's felt like for years he's been kind of waiting in the wings for another shot, mm-hmm. and now he's finally going to get it, and the Browns job in particular is very, very appealing to me because of all the weapons, and after Baker Mayfield's terrible season, I'd love to see what McDaniels could kind of scheme up around him there. Just wanted to note too, yesterday, kind of going off topic, Kevin Stefanski did a fantastic job scheming against the Saints.
Yes, he did.
Yesterday, and Kirk Cousins finally vindicated all of his truthers. Had a fantastic regular season and really played lights out yesterday. And Stefanski called a fantastic game. Now, obviously, they have to travel cross-country to play the 49ers this coming week.
Right.
They went in New Orleans and won, but still, that's an insanely tough spot to go into Santa Clara and win.
No doubt. I'm curious with McDaniels. You know, I know the one thing everyone keeps bringing up is the fact that he basically pulled the chute on Indianapolis.
Yeah,
he took the job, showed it for a couple of days, and then decided, meh.
But they got lucky because they kind of backed into a really great coach.
They did.
Reich. I mean, obviously the Colts had a really tough year with Luck retiring unexpectedly.
Right.
But Frank Reich has been fantastic for them for the last 2 years.
Yeah, no, you're right. So, I mean, we'll see what happens. I suspect Josh McDaniels, if he wants a job, will get a job. You know, he may look at Cleveland and Carolina and decide, you know what, neither one of these are the right fit.
But they're two, the Panthers just have a lot up in the air between Cam's health and his contract.
Right.
The Browns have legitimately good
players.
They've
got pieces.
It's just you want to go play for Jimmy or, you know, coach for Jimmy Haslam.
So as I was saying, both of them have things to consider there, right? I mean, I think in Carolina, you've got a new owner there who seems very committed to trying to build something great and committed to winning. But you're right. The pieces, they're still a work in progress. Cleveland is sort of the opposite situation there. You mentioned Frank Reich, which brings us to Indianapolis, which Chris Ballard, the general manager there in Indy, says, quote, "The jury's still out on Jacoby Brissett as a franchise quarterback." You know, look, I like Jacoby Brissett. I ended up having to pick him up in a lot of leagues where I drafted Andrew Luck early on in draft season. I feel safe in saying that he's not a franchise. He's a nice seat filler, right? He's a stopgap until you find your franchise quarterback. But I feel like, yeah, I don't know if that's them trying to be polite, but I feel like we sort of know who Jacoby Brissett is after seeing him a couple of times.
Sure, I think there's a little bit of that. But, you know, to start the season, Brissett was really good for fantasy. I mean, he had some really big touchdown games. And after T.Y. Hilton got hurt in week 8, his production really started to fall off. From weeks 1 through 7 here, Jacoby Brissett threw 14 touchdowns. And from then on, after Hilton got hurt, he got hurt in week 8. Brissett just had 4 touchdown passes from weeks 9 until the end of the season. So I get what they're saying, and you're probably right that talent-wise, Jacoby Brissett's not the premier quarterback that you want. Mm-hmm. But I think Brissett's good enough, and he played well enough to show that, like, if you have good pieces around him, like T.Y. Hilton and 2 good tight ends, Eric Ebron also got hurt to end the season. If you've got good pieces around him, you can win with Jacoby Brissett, but right. It's just one of those types of things. It has to be a perfect environment for him.
Speaking of which, it appears that they are moving on from Eric Ebron. I think that was the statement I saw last week, that he is not expected to be back there. So, Jack Doyle?
I wanted Jack Doyle so badly to be a thing at the end of the year, and he only had the 1 good game.
Yeah,
he was just really, I don't know if he was battling through injury or end of the year stuff, whatever it was, he just did not produce without Ebron.
Yeah,
Colts could be a sneaky bet for a quarterback, though. They have the 13th overall pick. Mm. You know, I'm not sure what type of capital they have in the second and third round, but they could be. They could be in the mix for a quarterback.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Absolutely there. And you know, look, their pieces aren't bad. You mentioned T.Y. Hilton. Yeah. I mean, Marlon Mack played well this year when he was healthy. You know, Jack Doyle can be a good tight end if they need him to be. So, it's not all bad there in Indianapolis. They've got a good defense. They've built their offensive line. So it certainly is, I think, on the up and up side, I think, there for the Colts. Last bit of news, Lamar Jackson, Christian McCaffrey are on the 2019 NFL All-Pro teams. Christian McCaffrey making it unanimously twice, right? Unanimously as a running back, unanimously as a flex, which I honestly didn't know that the All-Pro team had a flex position.
I didn't understand it either. And why would they use... So Christian McCaffrey made it as a running back, right?
Yes.
And a flex. Why wouldn't they give that to, like, Austin Eckler? He seems like the perfect guy for a flex spot.
Right.
Runner receiver.
So it did make me think, though, of, like, if we're going to put together our all fantasy team for 2019, I mean, figure Lamar Jackson's got to be our quarterback,
yes,
right?
Absolutely.
Christian McCaffrey at 1 running back spot.
Aaron Jones, number 2.
I think Aaron
Jones. Or Dalvin Cook.
See, I was going to go Aaron Jones or Dalvin Cook. Like, I was, you know, so I think Aaron Jones is probably my pick.
I mean, you can't go wrong with either one.
Right.
You can't go wrong.
That's a tough call.
Receivers, obviously, Michael
Thomas. Michael Thomas is that receiver. I mean, who's our second wide receiver there? Chris Godwin, maybe? Julio Jones?
I think Godwin, just based on where you picked him.
Yeah.
Fourth, fifth round pick.
I would think so. Yeah. All right, so we'll put Chris Godwin here. Well, and you mentioned the flex. I think Austin Eckler slides into that flex spot right there, right?
Flex play.
And then tight end, we go Kittle, or would you go Travis Kelce?
I mean, Kelce.
Or would you go Darren Waller based on draft position there?
Wow.
Because we expected what we got from Kelce and Kittle. They pretty much performed through expectations.
Kittle and Kelce are better players, but that's real. I think I'd give it to Waller just because.
Yeah, I think it's deserving.
Just because of the value. He was a 15th round pick or a waiver wire pickup.
Right.
I mean, and he produced as a top 5 tight end.
He was the league number three. Yeah, he was the number 3 tight end when it was all said and done. So, all right, I thought that was just a little fun thought exercise to kind of go through and figure it out who would be our all fantasy. I'm gonna put Dalvin Cook and Aaron Jones as a tie or something. They can share it because it's not like we're giving out any actual awards here, so it's all good. There you go. That is pretty much everything you need to know.
That was the news.
All right. Kind of a new thing for the offseason we'll do occasionally. Just the one big question. Not that that's going to be the only thing we talk about on this show, but it was a thing that was on my mind after what we saw on Saturday night with the Patriots losing to the Tennessee Titans. So New England is done. Their run, at least for this year, is over. But obviously the big conversation is whether or not this is the end of the New England dynasty, whether we have seen the last of the Patriots as a consistent contender for a Super Bowl title. And the even bigger question is, what is the future for Tom Brady? Now, he says retirement is, quote, pretty unlikely after the loss. He is going to be a free agent for the first time in his career. They cannot franchise him. They can't tag him in any sort of way. So, I mean, unless, you know, as we are sitting here talking right now, they somehow come to a new contract agreement or what have you, Tom Brady is going to be on the open market. Now, there are, obviously, there are 31 teams that I think would at least have some level of interest in Tom Brady. The top six, per our friends in the desert, if I were Al Michaels, Cleveland Browns, Carolina Panthers, the Las Vegas Raiders, almost said Oakland, but at this point they're the Las Vegas Raiders, the Dallas Cowboys, which I think is interesting, the Indianapolis Colts, and the Los Angeles Chargers. I'm not going to pretend that I know what Tom Brady is going to do, nor will I try to, you know, suggest what he should do. But let's say he actually does not retire, right? If he comes back for another year in the National Football League, is there one of those or maybe another team that excites you the most about him?
You know, I think the odds on favorite is he goes back to New England and him and Belichick get in a room. They figure out their differences and they make one last ride because Brady's not going to end his career on that pick six, right?
I mean, that seems, yeah.
No, no
that
matter
seems
what,
unlikely.
No matter what, he's not going to end his career on that pick six. I think the Steelers are the most interesting team, depending on what Big Ben does this offseason, because as you've mentioned, his arm disintegrated this past year.
It did.
And it's not like Big Ben has been he's not been a bastion of health. Over his NFL career, and now he's getting up there in age. He'll be 38 this year. Brady will be 43. I think the Steelers are really interesting. And you mentioned the Browns at the top. Like, is that just muscle reflex?
It's got to be.
I mean, the Browns have been looking habitually for
it's got to be.
Like, are we that out on Baker Mayfield after one bad year with one of the five worst head coaches in the NFL?
Yeah, I don't. That one surprised me. The Cowboys surprises me a little bit too, because
they're just trying to get bets there.
It's got
to
be right
because
Dak is playing well. He played well this year. It just seems like, and plus, it just seems like he's more of a long term option. And I don't know if he's going to be a less expensive option. That whatever, but it just doesn't make sense.
I just don't see Brady in Vegas.
I don't see Brady in Vegas necessarily, but part of me,
it would be fun.
The evil part of me would love to see how Raider fans react to Tom Brady as their quarterback, because look, man, Raider fans will always look at Tom Brady and they will always think the Tuck rule. Yep. And that is honestly to me where those two franchises went in opposite directions, right?
Absolutely.
From that point, the Raiders just couldn't figure it out. They've wandered in the wilderness for basically 20 years and the Patriots have been on top. And I think it all kind of started with that play. So I do wonder how Raider fans would react if Tom Brady was their quarterback. The other team that keeps getting a lot of traction is the Chargers. And I do know that the Chargers have to start looking at their quarterback situation very soon, right? I mean, we very well may have seen the last of Philip Rivers in a Charger uniform. They could go a different direction this offseason. I don't know, though, what is the benefit of the Chargers adding Tom Brady necessarily?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of just kicks the can down the road for them. You know, I guess maybe the Chargers view their roster as like a win-now roster.
And, which know, I could see that.
I could see that too. It's just, you know, it's the same thing with LA every single year. It's they just underperform based on their talent. I mean, they've got so many guys around them. But the Chargers, we'll talk about it obviously more this offseason, but the Chargers, I think, are one of the three most interesting team, because you have Rivers' contract expiring. Mm-hmm. Melvin Gordon's contract is expiring.
Right.
Austin Eckler's contract is expiring. He'll be probably cheaper than Gordon. Then you have all these pieces on defense that they have so much talent on defense that they should be much better on defense. You know, I don't know. I just don't know if I can see Brady not wearing
a Patriots uniform.
Patriots uniform. I mean, maybe the game is still in the back of my mind. That Titans game is still in the back of my mind and I just can't see it yet. But I don't see Brady going to a non-prestigious franchise, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I definitely think wherever he goes, if for whatever reason he leaves New England,
right,
he is going to go to a team that is a legitimate contender.
Yeah.
He's not, I mean, at 42, going soon to be 43 years old, he's not going to go to a place that's rebuilding.
And that's the thing, is if he goes back to New England, they're automatically a top five. If you put Super Bowl odds for 2021, they would automatically be one of the top five teams.
Right.
Easily.
Yeah. I look, the other part about the Chargers is, I know people say that you bring Tom Brady in and potentially you sell tickets, and I know that's a thing that the Chargers have had a hard time doing. I will tell you, though, that as someone who's lived in Los Angeles for, you know, coming up on 20 years now, what sells tickets more than anything else is just winning.
Yep.
Right. And maybe Tom Brady gives you a short term boost in terms of you know, putting butts in seats. But if they don't go out and win that short term, I mean, I was here when the, you know, I'm going to kind of go off board here, but when the LA Galaxy signed David Beckham, right? And this was like the biggest free agent signing in LA in a long time. And you're bringing this guy who's an international superstar here. And for a short time, yeah, it did kind of bring people out. But after you've seen it once or twice, and if the team's not any good, people find other things to do. So I think that's the one thing I would worry about with the Chargers there. Now, you talked about if he comes back to New England. I mean, you're right. They are probably going to be, once again, considered a contender. But do you look at – what does that mean offensively, right, fantasy-wise, since that's what we do here? I mean, do we still believe in Julian Edelman? Do we still believe in James White, Sony Michel, Rex Burkhead? I mean, they were okay at best this year. I mean, do we still think the same way with everybody being a year older now?
Well, Edelman, I think no matter what, will catch 90 to 100 balls if Brady's there again next year. I mean, this past season, Edelman was a top five fantasy receiver once again with top eight fantasy receiver once again in PPR leagues with Brady under center. What they desperately need is someone to stretch the field. And they have tried so many different ways to do it between Josh Gordon, Philip Dorsett this past season. They just absolutely need somebody to stretch the field. N'Keal Harry obviously was up and down, to say the least. He was obviously injured for most of the season. It was really up and down when he played. Had some really nice plays in the preseason and throughout the regular season. Made a nice catch against the Titans, but also had a bad drop in that game. It just kind of showed that he wasn't fully ready. The biggest thing for the Patriots in Bill Belichick's tenure with New England, the only thing he's gotten consistently wrong is scouting receivers.
Yes.
He nailed Rob Gronkowski,
right.
Nailed Aaron Jones, or excuse me, Aaron Hernandez, got a bunch of other incredible value picks. Mm-hmm. But the one bugaboo he's had is at receiver, and once again, he proved it.
I mean, the best one they've had, I mean, there's Julian Edelman, but it was Randy Moss who came.
Yeah, via draft pick trade.
Yeah.
And this past year, he threw away a second-round pick for Mohamed Sanu.
Yeah.
Now, granted, he probably made that trade because the Patriots are a very sharp organization. They have like three or four more comp picks that they're going to get that are in the third round. He probably felt like that second-round pick was expendable. That being said, Sanu for a second, I remember when that trade happened, you and I were both like,
right.
Kind of like piqued our interest. Like, what are we doing here? You know,
and nothing really happened.
I still think they're going to get in a room. They're going to figure it out. Belichick will find a way to get at least one more receiver to help out Brady, and they'll give it one more ride in the sunset.
So as for Brady himself, I mean, what we've seen from him the last couple of years, he's been okay at best. This year, I think he was the QB12. Last year, he was the QB15. Is what we're seeing, is it about Brady sort of declining? Is it the fact that he hasn't had those wide receivers? Or is it a combination of both? I mean, what are we thinking?
I think it's pretty much both. Mm-hmm. It's pretty clear it's both. I mean, Brady still has the same, I won't say the same zip, but he's still got a lot of zip on the ball. Mm-hmm. And in this past year, it was so clear he just had no help, no consistent help. They obviously tried to shoehorn AB in there, and that didn't work out either. This past year, I think, was just kind of like Brady never had a set sort of weapons,
right,
to go to and consistently lean on besides James White and Edelman.
Yeah. I don't know. This is going to be obviously one of the bigger storylines that the NFL is following over the next, who knows, couple of weeks, months, maybe till we get to free agency. Who knows? We'll see. But this will not be the last time we talk about Tom Brady and his future and what this means for us who play fake football. So there you go. Went through a handful of guys who had huge seasons, and trying to sort of project for next year whether or not we can expect regression. That's the big R word that we talk about every single year. Whether or not we can expect regression, how much, and what this means potentially for some of their draft futures. The first one that popped into my mind was Ryan Tannehill, who was just amazing down the stretch of the regular season. I'm sure he helped a lot of people win their fantasy leagues. 12 games that he played for the Titans, 22 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. That was a career low in interceptions. His previous career low had been 9, which was in 2018 when he played just 11 games. His previous career, or his career high, I should say, in touchdowns is 27. That was back in 2014. everything worked out for Ryan Tannehill, right? I mean, he had receivers making plays for him. You know, his touchdown rate, his touchdown rate was high, his interception rate was low. It was nice, Graham. It doesn't feel like it's sustainable for next year, and I wonder whether or not we're going to overrate him a little bit next
year. Yeah, the touchdown rate is definitely going to come down, but man, like A.J. Brown looks like the next Andre Johnson to me.
Yeah.
I mean, he has got a bona fide number one wide receiver, and obviously the Titans would be just obvious. They would be brainless if they didn't bring Tannehill back, which they will. I mean, they're going to make a pretty good run at this. Next week's game is going to be really interesting, too. Tannehill's touchdowns are going to regress, and it'll be really interesting to see where he goes in fantasy drafts, considering what we know about quarterbacks and how replaceable they are, et cetera, et cetera. You don't want to draft a quarterback earlier, et cetera, et cetera. But Tannehill, I don't know, man. Like, if he's like a 9th, 10th round pick, if he floats around in that range, I'm definitely going to be interested in that.
Which I feel like he will, right? He's going to be that guy that's sort of hanging around there in the 9th round, it's going to be tempting.
Yeah, Tannehill has sneaky rushing value too. And like, as we've seen every single year now of the last couple years, rushing quarterbacks have so much value in fantasy football, even if it's just like 20 yards a game.
Well, and the thing that, yeah, I'm going to put out my things I learned for the 2019 season very shortly. And one of the things I talked about was that of the top 10 quarterbacks in fantasy this year, 9 of them had at least 200 rushing yards. The only one that didn't was Aaron Rodgers. He was at 183. You know, he's sort of, I guess,
close enough, though.
Yeah. I mean, he's very close. I think there were 3 guys just outside that were outside the top 10 that had more. I mean, Gardner Minshew was one, but he obviously didn't play every single game. You know, I'm trying to think of who else. Oh, Ryan Fitzpatrick, who is your Dolphins rushing leader.
You know, even Jameis Winston ran for 250 this year.
Right, right. And so it's to the point now where I think once upon a time we looked at rushing quarterbacks and, you know, we've always called them a cheat code. It used to be a nice luxury to have. Now I think if you're going to win in fantasy football, it's almost mandatory that you have a quarterback who can run a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. Know? I'm with you on that.
You know, Lamar Jackson obviously he's on a different level, but you need a guy who can at least run a little bit and make plays with his legs if you're going to be successful in fantasy football. Aaron Jones, we talked about him earlier on our, you know, fantasy All-Pro team for the season. 19 total touchdowns. And never had more than previously. Never more than 9 previously. That number, that 19, seems really hard to duplicate. But what seems a little easier to duplicate? 285 touches.
Yeah.
It seems like the volume of opportunity is going to be there for him. So maybe the touchdowns don't come down, but the opportunity should at least still make him a relatively high pick.
You know, Aaron Jones had such a roller coaster year. I mean, he had some just monster multiple touchdown games mixed in with just absolute duds. And it's like his pass volume just went up and down every single week, too. You know, one week he'd catch 4 or 5 balls. The next week he literally wouldn't see a target. I think if he has more consistent usage, some of the touchdown, you know, because 19 touchdowns, he's probably not going to repeat that. But if he has more consistent volume week to week in the passing game, it'll kind of flesh out the variance, I think, of losing a few touchdowns, because he's not going to score 19 again. And Jamal Williams will always be involved there from Matt LaFleur. Both Jones and Jamal Williams are going to the final year of their rookie deals. But yeah, Aaron Jones is a lock for 280 to 300, maybe 310 touches next year again as the Packers lead guy. And man, like, talent wise, just, you know, not even related to fantasy, Aaron Jones is one of the 4 or 5 most talented running backs in the NFL. It's not even close. I mean, Christian McCaffrey, Dalvin Cook, Derrick Henry, Aaron Jones is like Saquon Barkley. He's up there in that conversation.
Yeah. And it's funny too, because especially after last year, everybody was just clamoring for him to get more opportunity, get more touches. And this year it happened. And, you know, we see the result there. So it'll be interesting to see where he goes next year. Austin Eckler, another very interesting potential, you know, early round draft pick next year.
Yeah.
92 catches on 108 targets, right? This is a guy who was involved in the passing game previously, but certainly not on the level that he was this year. That seems like a thing that's going to be hard to duplicate. But there is the potential that Melvin Gordon is gone, which opens up more opportunity. I mean, how much do we worry about Eckler's numbers coming down? I mean, I guess so much depends on what happens with Melvin Gordon, right?
Right, that's the big thing. You know, if you play in a dynasty league, right, I think Austin Eckler is probably the best veteran running back to trade for right now.
Right.
I think it's not even close, because Gordon is going to try and bang the cash register.
Absolutely.
For better or worse, wrong or right, Austin Eckler is going to take a smaller deal than Melvin Gordon. And I don't know if that should be the case. I think Austin Eckler is just as valuable, if not more valuable, than Melvin Gordon, just because of what he brings in the passing game and all the things that he can do as a receiver. But, man, if Gordon is not back, Austin Eckler has a path to being a top three, top five fantasy running back this coming season, and right now he is not appropriately priced, I think, in the long term, like dynasty community, because, man, like, he, you know, Eckler's only 24 years old.
Right.
He came into the league really young. He doesn't have a lot of wear and tear on him. There's a 2 or 3 year window here for Eckler to be just a consistent force in fantasy football if Melvin Gordon is not back.
Yeah. I just, man, what he did this year. I mean, look, we talked about him early in the season when we knew Gordon was going to hold out as a guy that you could, you know, get him in sort of the middle rounds, have him as a stopgap. None of us expected him to come out of the gates the way he did. I mean, he was the RB1 for the first few weeks of the season.
I think he was
right?
The RB1 for the first month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I mean,
and then since then, you know, after they got, you know, Gordon ended his holdout and came back, Eckler is still like a top 10, top 12 fantasy running back.
Yeah. I mean, he just continued to kind of hang around. He finishes the season as the RB4 this year. You know, just 557 rushing yards. And I think Fabs actually asked this question. We should actually research this. But that has to be the fewest number of rushing yards for a top five fantasy running back ever. 557.
Probably pretty close to it.
And
yeah,
I would,
that's interesting.
I would think so, just because, you know, PPR is still relatively new.
I can see. Yeah, let me see if I can find this.
Yeah, because I just can't imagine that anybody's had fewer than 557 rushing yards there. So there you go. Last one, and this was sort of a quibble here, right? Michael Thomas is going to be the consensus number one wide receiver off the board next year. He just set a record with 149 catches on 185 targets. I mean, it seems impossible to do again. I guess, though, if anybody could do it, it would be Michael Thomas working with Drew Brees in that offense, the way they operate. In fact, I remember asking, I put the poll out on Twitter after we talked about it, Graham, but whether or not anybody would break that record. And a lot of the responses I got were, yeah, Michael Thomas will do it again. I mean, I guess it's possible. I just hope that no one expects Michael Thomas to come into next season and catch 150 balls, because that just seems really hard.
No, he's not. I mean, I would be shocked if he caught 150 balls. But Michael Thomas, man, like, I haven't put just a ton of thought into this yet, but just like a cursory glance at next year, Christian McCaffrey's number one overall pick.
I think that's
pretty consensus.
Yeah.
Michael Thomas has to be number two, right? I mean, it's either him or Dalvin Cook or Derrick Henry. I think Derrick Henry has thrown his hat.
Derrick Henry may get in there. Yeah, I think that may end up being the offseason question, right? Who goes number two?
Dal Cook or Michael Thomas?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Michael Thomas is, if Michael Thomas gets past number three,
yeah,
that'll be an upset.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, people are running back lovers, but at the same time, like, Michael Thomas is, for the last 2 years, has had unparalleled consistency.
Right.
At the receiver position. So real quick, back to your Eckler point, mm-hmm. I pulled up my database here. Top five running back finishes since 2000 and actually since 2000, Danny Amendola back in 2000 and I believe it was 2005, had it here. Sorry, I just crashed on that. Danny Woodhead finishes a top five fantasy running back in 2015 with only 336 rushing yards.
Okay.
Right. That was the lowest.
Was he a Charger then, or was he with the Patriots?
I was about to say that was the year he was with the Chargers still. And actually, that was the year 2015 was a really bad year for running back scoring, if I remember correctly, because there was a lot of injuries that year at the running back position. So that's why Woodhead snuck in, and now running back is just gangbusters for fantasy football. But yeah, that was the lowest since 2000.
All right.
I don't know if I can go back any. I can't go back any further than that in this database I have, but. Yeah, Woodhead did it.
Which, it's funny, too, because I always joked that, you know, when Woodhead got hurt and Eckler burst on the scene a couple of years ago, that he somehow absorbed Danny Woodhead's powers.
And they're kind of the same player.
They're very much the same player, right? So, yeah, I guess it would make sense then that Danny Woodhead is the guy that has that.
I'm pretty sure Darren Sproles had a year where he got real close to top five, too,
mm-hmm.
With the Saints, and he rushed for, like, maybe 600 yards. So that was probably the third.
All right.
Yeah.
Which, Sproles was another guy who was a Charger for a little bit. So.
Yes, he was.
I don't know what that means, but whatever.
Chargers are good at drafting these flex type of running backs.
Apparently. All right. As we wrap up the show, I was sitting up late and putting this together and trying to think of something fun to do. And the idea of kind of mashing up two things, I call it Monday mashups. We'll do this every once in a while. Maybe we'll do it every Monday if I'm creative enough or if we have enough topics. Who knows? But at least for this Monday, I came up with the idea of quarterbacks as breakfast or brunch items. Some of it was watching Josh Allen play on Saturday, which was an adventure to say the least. So Eddie, I don't know if you have one, Graham, if you got one, yeah. But I put up a couple of things that I thought were fun. Like, so Josh Allen, I decided when I was watching him play, it's sort of like having mimosas, right? Like at brunch, where like at first you're like, hey, this is kind of fun, this is kind of cool. And then after like too much of it, you're like wondering what's going on and you're just making really bad decisions, which is a lot like what we saw from Josh Allen in that game on Saturday against the Houston Texans. The other one I came up with, because Jameis Winston has to be something, I have him as steak and eggs. I could even like upgrade it to country fried steak and eggs, because like, it's good, right? Like, you really enjoy that. But you know too much of it's probably going to kill you.
Yeah, that sounds like a Bruce Arians quote. Right? Bruce Arians quote right there.
I mean, like, too much of it is probably going to kill you. And that's sort of what Jameis Winston is, right? Like, when he's good, he's really, really good. But, like, you know, eventually he's going to do something that's going to kill your chances at some point there.
That is perfect. Going back to your Josh Allen comparison, that's fantastic, by the way. Rob Perez, Worldwide Wob on Twitter.
Who's great on Twitter.
Fantastic on Twitter. He tweeted during the Bills game, he said, I've always wondered what J.R. Smith playing quarterback would look like. that's Josh Allen.
That's pretty good.
I've got one here.
Yeah.
It's low-hanging fruit, but it's still good.
Right.
Joe Flacco's burnt toast. He's absolutely burnt toast at this point. You know, no amount of good jelly or butter can save Joe Flacco. You can't butter up Joe Flacco at this point with good receivers, good coaching.
Right.
He's burnt toast. And Lamar Jackson, he's the three-course breakfast meal.
Oh, of course.
He's the three-course. Whatever three courses you want. If you want eggs, bacon, French toast, you want eggs and some ham and maybe a great glass of orange juice, Lamar Jackson has proven he is the three-course breakfast meal, and he just does everything at goat levels.
Yeah. No, I mean, so I came up with this partially, too, because our pal, Haitham Kalani, who was one of the producers here, he always refers to people or things as being oatmeal, which, like, it's fine. You don't like clamor for it. So, like, I looked at it and, like, Kirk Cousins, sort of oatmeal. That's
literally what I was going to say.
Yeah.
I was going to say oatmeal, but sometimes with, like, a little bit, sometimes you put, like, cinnamon or, like, a little bit of brown sugar in it.
Right.
Like, here and there, a couple of bites, you're like, oh, this is good. More often than not, it's just
oatmeal. Yeah. You're fine. Like, you don't hate it, but it's not exciting. So, yeah. I don't know if you, did you have any, Eddie?
I was going to say the Kirk Cousins one with the oatmeal because it's, it doesn't win on Monday Night Football, but will somehow,
I'm sorry. Who just went to New Orleans?
That's what I'm saying. That's the bite with
cinnamon.
Cinnamon and brown sugar.
Right.
And the other bites when you lose them on a football. What's the goal? Lobster eggs Benedict, as well as Pat Mahomes.
Ooh. Like, ooh, yeah, nice.
That's fancy.
The highest of high end.
Right.
Like, that's got to be Mahomes.
That's fancy. Yeah, I like that.
Sounds
I like
good
that.
Too.
I'm going to put this out on Twitter, too, and let you guys kind of weigh in and stuff, because I feel like it'd be fun to just get some responses. Because this is the kind of goofy stuff we're going to do in the offseason, because we got a long time before we get actual football to talk about. So there you go. All right. I think that's it. We are done. We appreciate you downloading and listening as always. You know the drill. Tell two friends to tell two friends. Rate, review, and remember, age is of no importance unless you're cheese. We'll see you on Wednesday.